I sallied out among the shipping. After much prolonged sauntering and many random inquiries, I learnt that there were three ships up for 3 years' voyages, the Devil Dam, the Titbit, and the Pequod. I peered and pried about the Devil Dam, from her hopped over to the Titbit, and finally, going on board the Pequod, looked around her for a moment, and then decided that this was the very ship for us. Long seasoned and weather-stained in the typhoons and calms of all four oceans, her old hull's complexion was darkened like a French grenadier's, who has alike fought in Egypt and Siberia. Her venerable bows looked bearded. Her masts, cut somewhere on the coast of Japan, where her original ones were lost overboard in a gale, her masts stood stiffly up like the spines of the three old kings of Cologne. She was a thing of trophies, a cannibal of a craft, tricking herself forth in the chased bones of her enemies. All round her unpaneled open bulwarks were garnished like one continuous jaw, with the long, sharp teeth of the sperm whale inserted there for pins, to fasten her old hempen thews and tendons to. Those thews ran not through the base blocks of landwood, but deftly traveled over sheaves of sea ivory. Scorning a turnstile wheel at her reverend helm, she sported there a tiller, and that tiller was in one mass, curiously carved from the long, narrow lower jaw of her hereditary foe. The helmsman who steered by that tiller in a tempest felt like the Tartar when he holds back his fiery steed by clutching its jaw. A noble craft, but somehow a most melancholy. All noble things are touched with that. Now, when I looked about the quarter-deck for someone having authority in order to propose myself as a candidate for the voyage, at first I saw nobody. But I could not well overlook a strange sort of tent, or rather a wigwam, pitched a little behind the main mast. And half concealed in this queer tenement, I at length found one who by his aspect seemed to have authority. "Is this the captain of the Pequod?" said I, advancing to the door of the tent. "Supposing it be the captain of the Pequod, what dost thou want of him?" he demanded. "I was thinking of shipping." "Thou wast thou? I see thou art no Nantucketer. Ever been in a stove-boat?"
"No, sir, I never have."
"Dost know nothing at all about whaling, I dare say, eh?"
"Nothing, sir, but I have no doubt I shall soon learn. I have been several voyages in the merchant service, and I think that—"
"But what takes thee a whaling? I want to know that before I think of shipping ye."
"Well, sir, I want to see what whaling is. I want to see the world."
"Want to see what whaling is, eh? Have ye clapped eyes on Captain Ahab?"
"Who is Captain Ahab, sir?"
Aye, I thought so. Captain Ahab is the captain of this ship."
"I am mistaken, then. I thought I was speaking to the captain himself."
"Thou art speaking to Captain Peleg. That's who ye are speaking to, young man. It belongs to me and Captain Bildad to see the Pequod fitted out for the voyage and supplied with all her needs, including crew. Clap eye on Captain Ahab, young man, and thou wilt find he has only one leg."
"What do you mean, sir? Was the other one lost by a whale?"
"Lost by a whale? Young man, come nearer to me. It was devoured, chewed up, crunched by the monstrousest parmaceti that ever chipped a boat. Ha, ha, ha!"
I was a little staggered, but go a whaling I must, and I would. And the Pequod was as good a ship as any, I thought the best. And all this I now repeated to Peleg. Seeing me so determined, he expressed his willingness to ship me.
"And thou mayest as well sign the papers right off," he added. "Come along with ye."
And so saying, he led the way below deck into the cabin. Seated on the transom was what seemed to me a most uncommon and surprising figure. It turned out to be Captain Bildad, who along with Captain Peleg was one of the largest owners of the vessel. "Captain Peleg," said I have a friend with me who wants to ship too. Shall I bring him down tomorrow?"
"To be sure," said Peleg. "Fetch him along and we'll look at him."
And after signing the papers, off I went. But I had not proceeded far when I began to bethink me that the captain with whom I was to sail yet remained unseen by me. Turning back, I accosted Captain Peleg, inquiring where Captain Ahab was to be found.
"And what dost thou want of Captain Ahab? It's all right enough. Thou art shipped."
"Yes, but I should like to see him." "But I don't think thou wilt be able to at present. I don't know exactly what's the matter with him, but he keeps close inside the house, a sort of sick, and yet he don't look so. In fact, he ain't sick, but no, he isn't well either. But how, young man, he won't always see me, so I don't suppose he will thee. He's a queer man, Captain Ahab, so some think, but a good one. Oh, thou'lt like him well enough. No fear, no fear. He's a grand, ungodly, godlike man, Captain Ahab. Doesn't speak much, but when he does speak, then you may well listen. Mark ye, be forewarned. Ahab's above the common. Ahab's been in colleges as well as among the cannibals. Been used to deeper wonders than the waves. Fixed his fiery lance in mightier, stranger foes than whales. His lance, aye, the keenest and surest, that out of all our isle."
As I walked away, I was full of thoughtfulness. What had been incidentally revealed to me of Captain Ahab filled me with a certain wild vagueness of painfulness concerning him. And somehow, at the time, I felt a sympathy and a sorrow for him, but for I don't know what, unless it was the cruel loss of his leg. And yet I also felt a strange awe of him. But that sort of awe, which I cannot at all describe, was not exactly awe. I do not know what it was, but I felt it, and it did not disincline me towards him, though I felt impatience at what seemed like mystery in him, so imperfectly as he was known to me then. However, my thoughts were at length carried in other directions, so that for the present dark Ahab slipped my mind. As we were walking down the end of the wharf toward the ship, Queequeg carrying his harpoon, Captain Peleg, in his gruff voice, loudly hailed us from his wigwam, saying he had not suspected my friend was a cannibal, and furthermore announcing that he had let no cannibals on board that craft unless they previously produced their papers. "Why," said I, "he's a member of the First Congregational Church." Here it be said that many tattooed savages sailing in Nantucket ships at last come to be converted into the churches.
"First Congregational Church?" cried Bildad. "What, that worships in Deacon Deuteronomy Coleman's meeting house?"
Finding myself thus hard pushed, I replied, "I mean, sir, the same ancient Catholic church to which you and I, and Captain Peleg there, and Queequeg here, and all of us, and every mother's son and soul of us belong, the great and everlasting First Congregation of this whole worshipping world. We all belong to that, only some of us cherish some crotchets no ways touching the grand belief. In that we all join hands."
"Splice, thou meet splice hands," cried Peleg, drawing nearer. "Young man, you'd better ship for a missionary instead of a foremast hand. Come aboard, come aboard. Never mind about the papers. I say, tell Quahog there, what's that you call him? Tell Quahog to step along."
So down we went into the cabin, and to my great joy, Queequeg was soon enrolled among the same ship's company to which I myself belonged.